All right, everybody, we're back this week. I've got a special interview with Brother Joe Martinez, Worshipful Brother Joe Martinez. We are in Virginia. We missed the Monday release, so I thought rather than continue the reading of Manly Hall's Occult Anatomy of Man, we'd break it up and throw up a really great, quick episode of the podcast to kind of fill the void that we left last Monday. So, Brother Joe, welcome back to the podcast.
Hello. It's been a while.
It's been a little bit, so we're sitting downstairs in your office surrounded by Star Trek Enterprises and various ships from the show. It is a spectacular arrangement.
Nerd Palace, indeed. Indeed. Yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been a little bit. I think the last time we had you on this show in particular to be a guest, we talked a little bit about some ancient alien stuff.
Yes.
Which was kind of fun. But recently, I had the pleasure of hanging out and sharing some fellowship and speaking at your lodge for the Feast of St. John, which was an excellent event. And, you know, I think the thing that I really wanted to talk to you about today was something that sort of eludes a lot of us, and that is we're looking for a specific experience in lodge and how to bring about a change in attitude, in operations, and all of these things. And somehow, you've managed to do this, and I've noticed it when you were a senior warden, and even back in your junior warden days, you had started to make some changes. But before we get into that, I want to acknowledge that I've seen lodges do nothing but education, which is what we do, and I think it leaves a big hole in, I should rephrase that, let's see, it leaves a giant gap in the idea of what a Masonic Lodge could be. I know that it's not all traditional observance, because we've seen traditional observance lodges rise and fall, and I know it's not all service and charity, because this is all people complain about. Is when it hits all that. So there's got to be a magic mix. And so before we get into it, tell us how you came into Masonry.
Ooh, okay. So it's kind of a jaded story, actually. I did not have a Masonic background. Nobody that I know in my family was a Mason. So I didn't grow up with Masons in my family. Never heard about it. I'm definitely one of those Da Vinci Code / National Treasure guys. So I read the Da Vinci Code, and I think National Treasure came out around that time as well. And that's when I got interested in Freemasonry and, you know, the lore around people who are Masons, our founding fathers, and, you know, them having a secret that nobody else had. And that's what kind of drew me towards Masonry. So I petitioned the lodge all the way back in 2003. I was still in the military at the time, and I was living in Maryland. And so I joined a lodge, a local lodge, the lodge that was in the town, a couple of miles from my house. And I did what was expected of you. I went and knocked on the door. They brought me in, and they talked to me about it and said, you know, the usual spiel that you have everybody here is, this is Freemasonry. It's, you know, fraternal organization. And we do this and we do that. And, but again, I had that romanticized version of Freemasonry in my head. So I didn't really listen to anything that they said. And I said, great, I want to join. So they said that, well, you got to know two Freemasons to sign your petition. So I was like, oh crap, I don't think I know any Freemasons. So again, I was in the military. I was still active duty, in the army. So I took my petition, and shortly after that, where one person I had met that I worked with in the military, he was also another service member, that was the first time I ever noticed that he had a Masonic ring on. I was like, holy crap, you're a Mason. He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, I'm thinking about joining. And he's like, great. So he would talk to me and ask me questions and ask me why I was interested in joining. And, you know, I told him what I had thought about the fraternity, and, you know, after a short amount of time, he decided to sign my petition, and he introduced me to another person that worked in our office that was also a Freemason that I had, he introduced him as a Freemason. I had known him for a couple of years, but I did not know he was a Mason. And so I got my petition signed and turned it in, paid my fee, and got excited for my my initiation. And got initiated, and I did the traditional route, you know, holding up air quotes, where Maryland was a catechism state, so I would get my degrees, learn my catechism, meet with the catechism instructor. It did take me a little bit longer than most, not because I was slow to memorize things, but because I was traveling so much and we were in the middle of a conflict, I guess you could say.
Sure.
Overseas. Yeah. So so it took me almost a year between degrees. So then I was finally raised in 2005. And super excited to be a Master Mason. Now I can go into meetings and now I can see stuff and do things.
Yeah, so you mentioned this idea of kind of being jaded or whatever. And I have in my notes, I know you went into the fraternity, you had some expectations, maybe there was some disparity between what you had expected and what you experienced.
Yes, 1,000%.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was shortly after my initiation. I'm sorry, my raising. And it was the first meeting after I became a Master Mason. I was so excited to go to lodge and I can attend a meeting, and you know, we had dinner and it was great. And I go upstairs, it was a two-story lodge, and I go upstairs and put my apron on, super jazzed. And one of the brothers comes out and says, "Hey, our Tyler's not going to be here tonight, so we'd like you to fill in and be Tyler." I was like, "Oh, okay, what's the Tyler do?" Well, he sits outside. I'm like, "Oh, okay, well, alrighty." Well, you know, in the back of my head, I'm like, I'm not really going to sit outside the whole meeting. And sure as hell, I sat outside that entire two-hour meeting.
Dang.
So my first meeting as a Master Mason, I couldn't tell you what happened inside, but I got to sit outside the entire time. And then, went home, kind of bummed. And next month rolled around, and they asked me to be Tyler again. And I was like, "Well, I really want to sit inside and actually see what goes on." And they said, "Yeah, there's plenty of time for that." So so I sat outside again, and I'm like, "Wow, this is really crappy. This is not fun at all." So it was a couple of months in, I finally got to go into a meeting. The Tyler finally showed up, and got to sit inside. And it was the driest, soggiest, most boring thing I have ever sat through in my entire life. Just across the board, the ritual was not great, and it didn't seem like people really cared. You know, we did a lot of business, a lot of reading of the minutes. That's where my love for the minutes began.
Yeah,
of course. Way back then. And we actually did nothing. So I walked out of the meeting and I was like, "What did I just join?"
Because
it definitely didn't sound like what it looked like on the pamphlets. So, yeah.
That's wild. So you take a break. I know you take a break in Freemasonry. Always a member, but you're not attending. You're doing other things in life.
And then we moved. We left Maryland and came to Virginia, and I hadn't been an active Mason that entire time.
Then you become active. And I think what's interesting is some guys, they join, they never come back. Some guys join, go off to the shrine, do their thing there, and then they rediscover Blue Lodge and come back and, like, are in 110%. Then you've got guys who sort of take a break, can come back. But it seems like a lot of these guys who come back after a spell of being away dive in at least to a point of what I would consider, in comparison to the rest of Masonry, they dive in and they are active way more than usual. Whether that's way more than usual, or even saying to a point of extreme activity like you and I, what changed for you that, whether in the real world or, you know, I know you have been a consumer of the text, both in print, online, active in forums and things. What changed in the real world for you that made you say, "I got to get back into a lodge and do some stuff"?
So the, and I think I've mentioned this story a little bit before, but, I'll give you the short version. Yeah, I was a dues paying Mason, had not been to lodge in a very long time, quite a few years. And, it was kind of serendipitous how I stumbled upon Manasseh Lodge. It totally was it was not a planned thing. And, I had found a lodge taking another way home from work, cause I was working in DC and I was a commuter. So that was a fun time. Love telework. And, I had haphazard upon Manasseh Lodge and, you know, I saw that I was stopped at a light and I saw that the lights were on and, there were cars there and I'm like, wow, I hadn't been in a Masonic lodge in 8 years. So just for giggles, I decided to pull into the parking lot and walk in. And it was a Monday night, and Manasseh Lodge has had ritual practice every Monday since 1905 without missing a beat.
Good for them.
Yeah. And, walked in and it was absolutely the brothers that were there that gave me that transformative experience. I walked in off the street and they welcomed me like I was a long lost friend who hadn't been there in 20 years. And, every single person there was many of whom you've met, were so warm and so welcoming. And by the time I walked out of the visit, cause they had to go in and go to ritual practice, I felt like I had been there for years and I was kind of finding my way home. It was just the fellowship was amazing. The genuine nature of every single person I had met that day was off the charts. It was a completely different experience from, you know, the mid 2000s when I had you know, I had felt that the brothers there were happy that somebody younger was there to start to pick up some of the slack and, you know, give them the slough work to do. But I that sense of disenchantment was totally not there the day that I walked into the lodge. So, you know, I went home that night and I was like, I got to get back into Freemasonry. And, I joined everything with both feet first. You know, I joined every appendant body I could and, got involved in everything. And I felt like I had missed out on so many years of not doing anything that there was so much to do.
That's really interesting. I've got a guy at my home lodge, Waukegan 78, our mother lodge. Brother Ron, and he came back after several years of not being active, and he has become the temple, I don't know what you want to call it. He's the guy who shows up when the fire extinguishers have to be recharged, or when the gas company needs to come in. He's our marshal. He sets up and takes down the lodge before and after every meeting. And he said in his last meeting we were in, we were talking about what the beauties of Freemasonry were. And, he had mentioned very much similar story to you that, after not being there for several years, he got an invitation to come back and talk about, you know, a Masonic anniversary or whatever. And some brothers basically approached him and said, I've never met you before, but you're really great. Just keep coming to the lodge. It's really great to have you here. And you don't have to do anything. And, he was like, okay. But he said that he felt that he had missed out on so much, which is why he gives back so much. Mm. And, I thought that was really incredible. I feel like a lot of us feel an indebtedness to, our fraternity, in particular, our lodges, for some kindness that they had given us that seems to have been either exemplified through the initiation or in your case, a simple welcome, and pulled you back in.
Well, it's those who, I think that sense of indebtedness, and I think you're exactly right. I think it's for those who get it, right? Who, you know, when you start to peel back the layers of the onion, when you start to understand why you're really there and for what purpose you're there, I think that's where that sense of gratitude comes from. And I think to your point, it's gratitude, as well as indebtedness, but it's not it doesn't become a burden. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that I think people want to do willingly and freely. And I think that's amazing.
We've witnessed over the last at least 10 years, we've witnessed Masonry, what we might call a battleship in a bathtub turning around. And we've witnessed this through lodges having educational programming. We've witnessed this through lodges having any number of events that are happening, more and more members showing up. And I guess, what do you think the motivating factor is in lodges making these leaps to become even, I don't want to say better because that's very subjective, but to operate or fire on all cylinders, what do you think the impetus behind this is, or the catalyst?
Yeah, so I think, unfortunately, I'm going to give you the terrible answer of it. It depends on each lodge, but I think what I've seen from my lodge and lodges that give off that same vibe is you've got a group of brothers who all make that revelation or make that leap in logic that we need to be doing something a little bit different and we need to be doing it together, right? There's no one-man show in Freemasonry because all you get is, you know, really bright stars that burn out very quickly and they never come back, right?
Yeah.
So I think, especially for us, I think I was blessed that when I joined the lodge and when I got in line, there were people in front of me and there were people behind me that all were basically looking for the same thing in our lodge experience. And I'm not going to, you know, like you had said before, I'm not going to say, oh, well, it's TO or bust or this, that, and the other thing, or we have to do things a certain way. It's a combination of all those things, you know, of showing that being more than a social club is a better and more productive use of your time in Masonry.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to so many great things, right? It leads to wanting to do more education. You know, when I first got there, education in the lodge was reading out of the code book or whatever you guys call it, you know. And it was boring and it was stale and it was terrible. Until we started to switch to, hey, let's actually do presentations about Masonry. And then, oh, look, let's have people who are experts in fields come and talk about things and have let's have Masonic rock stars like yourself come and talk. Because the brothers wanted that and they realized that that was a better lodge experience than what they had been accustomed to. So I think when you come to that realization together, it's a much more powerful impetus to change things in your lodge. And again, we've been blessed that it's been a consistent pattern. And I know you had mentioned it earlier where things started to change a little bit when I was junior warden and then my 2 years as senior warden because we all sat in place for a year during COVID. But the people ahead of me and the people behind me, we were all invested in the same thing. So those changes we all made together and they became lasting changes. So yeah, I think we've been lucky in that regard.
It's fascinating to hear about a cohesiveness that you're referring to, that oftentimes we have guys who want to show up, and become they get elected into the mastership, into the East, and they have a plan. And not everybody's involved in this plan. It's just their plan. They want to do it their way. And they're going to run it that way for their year. And then this is it, right? There's no...
Right off into the sunset.
Yeah. Okay. And I think this really turns some folks off, both in terms of you being a lone ranger, you not being part of the team. Even if the ideas are great, if you don't include other people to get their buy-in on it and provide a meaningful outlet for them to be a part of your plan, then you're going to, you know, take a dump in the punch bowl, and it's just not working out. And as we talk about this, I guess we see this happening all over the place where guys are starting to realize something that you said. You used the word together. And I think this is super important. And I didn't realize this, I think, until probably a year and a half ago. And this is the idea that even though I left my mother lodge for a term, probably 3 years or so, and I went to, you know, we started Space Novum, and we are a premier education lodge. I personally, we had told everybody, don't leave your mother lodges, right? This is an outlet lodge for education. And you know what I did was I left my mother lodge. I didn't follow my own advice. And it took about a year and a half to really start to feel this weird, I was recognizing this void of togetherness. My mother lodge met every single Monday night, regardless, the holiday didn't matter. We were either going to have a meeting, have a degree, or have ritual practice. It didn't matter. Sometimes we just played cribbage, and, you know, whatever. Had a, you know, Little Caesar's pizza and did whatever. But the idea is, even if the programming wasn't wonderful, we had this sort of bond and fellowship that backed it all up. And I think that's something that educational lodges and even observant lodges miss. That we get so hung up on the program, we get so hung up on the ritual and the egregore of the lodge and things, that we miss a point in the idea of fellowship. And I know there's probably observant Masons out there. I think many people can be categorized as observant. But I think there's observant Masons out there. I think there's educational Masons out there that go, yeah, but, you know, I don't, we have great friendships and we really care about each other at our lodge. And that's true. But there's an element, I think, of a type of masonry that allows you to sit in the bed of a truck outside, not at lodge, meeting up with a brother or something just at his house, you know, having a couple Cokes or a couple beers or something, sitting on the back of a tailgate, talking about lodge stuff or just life stuff that doesn't seem to get fostered in those observant and educational schemas.
Well, I think what you're saying is, and I completely agree with you, is, and I am absolutely guilty of being what I'm about to lament, which was, you have Masons that you can bucket in a certain category. And I myself will say I was very, very pro observant Masonry for such a long time. And same. There are elements of observant Masonry, which I absolutely adore, that we've implemented in our lodge and people have absolutely enjoyed. But I think when you come to Masonry with an agenda, the agenda becomes the focus of your practice of Masonry and not the brothers around you, right? So,
ooh, yeah.
You know, so, and like I said, I'm not poo-pooing observant Masonry. I think it fits a certain niche, and there are times where I look for that richer experience. But again, I absolutely look forward to, for me, every Monday, going to ritual practice in flip-flops and a t-shirt and sitting with a bunch of brothers that actually give a crap about practicing their ritual to the point where it is profound and it's great and everybody knows their stuff and we're able to really quickly and easily, with no extra work, put on amazing initiatic experiences, I think, you know? Which, again, you and I have talked about ad nauseum. You know, that's how you hook people into Masonry, is just give them an amazing experience going up the ladder. And everything else falls into place. All the stuff that you're talking about will fall into place organically based on how great of an experience that they had starting out. But, again, I think if you come to Masonry with an agenda, you'll achieve everything in that agenda, but a lot of stuff falls by the wayside.
How do you see what you've been doing? I mean, you've been in the master's chair for 1 year, and then you, as lodges do, sometimes something happens, and then you had to continue to serve the lodge in this capacity.
Yeah.
And we know it's exhausting. We know that masters get out of the East and they take a deep breath, and all they want to do is, you know, is what they call an IPM or immediate past master, is sit on the sideline and hang out and watch. And I think that's the dream, but sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. Like, we sometimes guys go into the secretary job, right, or become the Tyler or the chaplain or something. But I guess, you know, you'll have had 2 full years in the East, 2 full years you had in the West. And I guess in all of that, a lot of the, I remember you were the worshipful master, Tom. What an incredible guy. I think about all of the improvements, and I say improvements not as a term to say, you know, to crap onto the lodges or anything, right? Mm. But I think about all the improvements you guys made over the years in terms of a true experience. And I wonder, how do you see what you've been doing as sort of progressing a change in masonry? Or like, how do you see what you've been doing and think about it in terms of the future of the craft? Perhaps, like, does it affect the area more as visitation starts to take hold and people come see what you guys are doing? Do you think this is happening more and more around the U.S.? What do you think is there a legacy to doing things, and how does that look in the future?
Well, I hope so. You know, I hope there. So for me, I think the last couple of years, my takeaways have been, because, you know, you were right. I started out with some things my first year as master that I absolutely wanted to do. It's like, hey, we're going to have education every single stated meeting, right? Like, we're going to do something. And we mixed it up. You know, it wasn't just weird stuff for just the weird guys. You know, we had presentations on a historical framework or a scientific framework or an esoteric framework. But it was a little bit for everybody, just to expose them to the fact that the purpose of having a stated meeting was to actually learn about masonry, right? Not hear the committee reports and not hear the minutes read and not, you know, go through the 45 minutes of introductions, things that are not my favorite part of a meeting. But I think that the group of brothers that attend and participate and are constant in the lodge have gotten accustomed to a certain way to practice masonry. You know, and the two big takeaways that I've seen in the last couple of years are, brothers want to travel more. So a few years ago, I would travel all over the country.
And I've witnessed masonry. You posting, and I see guys like Mo and other guys from your lodge traveling with you.
Absolutely, and they look forward to it. So I think that's big takeaway number one, is that they've gotten accustomed to, I need to get the hell out of here if I want to go experience masonry. You know, we need to travel, whether it's the lodge the next town over or if it's a few states away. But they've gotten accustomed to, I get a different experience when I go elsewhere, so I should go and seek that different experience. So, mm-hmm. You know, anytime I travel, you know, the invite's always out there, like, hey, happy to bring you guys with me. And there's always people that want to come. And it's different people every time, too. It's not just the same people. But, like, perfect example, when I took a bunch of dudes down to Harmon Lodge in North Carolina.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the...
I saw videos on TikTok, man. It was really fun.
No... Zero stoplights in the town of Yadkinville, North Carolina. And it was a country lodge, a country experience. But, you know, every single person that went had such an amazing time. That's a huge takeaway, and that's something that I hope continues. And the other legacy point, quote-unquote, if I'd have to say there should be one, is doing things together. I've learned over my last few years moving up in line is that you have to get buy-in from everybody. So, you know, there's things that Joe wants to do, and there's things that Doug wants to do, and you just got to find a way to get those things done across the board in a collective manner, right? So, you know, maybe not every month it's going to be weird esoteric night, but, you know, if you can give the brothers a little bit of everything each time they come, they'll want to come back for more. You know, you got to give them an incentive to want to come back. Freemasonry is a volunteer organization in terms of not just your finances and your resources, but your time. You have to volunteer time to be there. Nobody gets paid for it. Very few people get paid for it.
Yeah.
But because a couple do. But you got to give people incentives to want to come back. And I think we've been really good at doing that and instilling that in people that have joined Masonry since I've been there. You know, we very rarely have the brother who goes through the degrees and we never see him again. You know, they come back and they participate and they let us know what type of masonry that they want to practice. You know, whether it's, hey, I love bringing my family around all the time, or hey, my kids want to join the youth groups, or hey, I want to be more social and I have no friends and I'm looking for a group of people, or hey, I'm into the weird stuff, let's go read Manly Hall. You know, if you give people those opportunities, they're going to want to take hold of those opportunities and come back and do it again and again and again.
Yeah, I've witnessed this at your lodge. I seem to have I think I asked you just in a private messenger a while back, and I had asked you about the success or secrets of what you're doing over at Manasseh. And it seems like they've always kind of had, from the point that you went there, and you said they treated you so well, and they really lit a spark in you, and it seems as though they've already always kind of had this specialness. And maybe all you've done is continued to shine the silverware and continue to, like, promote it and build it up further from what it was. Do you think that every lodge has a chance? Or do you think that there are some lodges out there that maybe charity's all it's ever going to have going for it, or becoming a degree mill, perhaps? Or, I mean, it's no secret, Manasseh, when I go there, I see experts in every field. I mean, I talk to so many guys that come to your lodge that all have different interests and things, and they are doing things together. So there's that, you know, ritual and social and, you know, education and charity all mixed together. So you get it all. But
it's got to, I'll answer that one first and then the other answer after. Great example. When you've come, and it's not just when you come, it's when anytime we have a big thing, we always get a fair amount of people who are not members of that lodge that are coming to Manasseh to have a different type of experience. You know, sure. They'll come from a charity-only lodge, or they'll come from a, you know, hey, all we do is degrees lodge, or hey, all we do is just regular stated meetings with nothing, you know, no fanfare. But they come here, and we welcome that. I love the fact that we have so many visitors every time we have a stated meeting, or even a degree. You know, people love coming to degrees at Manasseh Lodge because we give a crap when we put on degrees, you know? So,
plus we always see those great pictures of you in the top hat sitting in the east, you know?
Yeah. Can't wait for those to stop. You know, going back to your first question, I've never been a fan of keeping, I've not been a fan of nostalgia. So I know that there are lodges out there that would do better going by the wayside and giving room for something else to flourish. You know, we're still so wedded to this mindset of I have to have a lodge with 150 members on the books, even though 10% of them are the ones that actually attend. You know, the whole 90-10 rule totally applies in Freemasonry. I'm much more of a fan of, and I've seen it, work successfully in smaller, more cohesive lodges being successful, as opposed to lodges with just a lot of people that pay dues and keep the lights on, struggling to maintain any semblance of regular practices. You know, I'm a big fan of burn it down and build it up better.
So I think one of my final questions for you is thinking about how many lodges are out there. Across, we'll call it the United States, because we know that the rest of the world does things a little differently. But speaking in large part for the United States, how many lodges do you think are starting to do it differently? And what I mean is, maybe you think about it like in terms of a bell curve or something like that, but are we on a cusp of a majority shift into the kind of masonry that you and I enjoy?
I'd like to think we are. And again, you and I are very social Masons, right? There are people who do the things that we do or enjoy the things that we like or try to promote, you know, a more concentrated focus on the things that they do in Freemasonry that we just have never seen, right? They're not on Facebook. They're not on Instagram. They're not posting stuff and reaching out to people. But I think we're almost at the cusp. I think there's a little bit more of the administration of Freemasonry that kind of needs to shed some dead weight first. There's a lot of archaic ways that we do things. And I think that's more a generational thing than a hindrance thing for us, right? It's just, this is the way we've always done things. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, just pulling something out of a hat, like, recognition, you know, it's still such an archaic way, even though we're such a information-based society, right? These are things we could shore up in 10 seconds, right? But we still have to go through months and years of paperwork to do things like that. Like, so I think we're almost there. I think people in positions of leadership are, we're starting to see people that are of the mindset that we can use modern practices to improve Freemasonry. So I think we're almost there, but not there yet.
All right. Last question for you. Advice to anybody going into the East in their lodge, not Grand Lodge or anything, but going into the lodge. What advice would you have to somebody going into the East? We're looking at a lot of people who are starting to plan. I'm hearing so many things from the junior wardens and senior wardens out there who have already, like they've mentioned on Facebook, like they're already starting to plan for their year in the East if they get so elected. And I'm like, wow, that's awesome, because I didn't start to plan for the East until about, you know, the day I got elected, because I wasn't sure how that was going to go. What's some advice you've got for somebody potentially going into the East?
Yeah, so these are all things that, that my lodge did. It was nothing that I did organically, but I think it's an and not all lodges do it. I think it's an excellent roadmap for success, which is number one, absolutely have a plan, but then understand it's not your plan. It's the lodge's plan. So while there are a couple of awesome things that Robert or Joe want to do in their year, you got to get buy-in. Otherwise, it's not going to be successful. Number two, as much as some people may look very much forward to it or not looking forward to it at all, talk to your past masters. Like we, at my lodge, we require all our senior wardens about halfway into their year to meet with all the past masters or any past masters that want to come and tell them what their plans are for the, for their year in the East and what things they want to do and get feedback. And you don't have to listen to the feedback, but at least it's been given to you. And understand that things are never going to go the way that you want them to go, and always have a fallback plan or, you know, something to do instead. Because, you know, plans are great, but, you know, Murphy always gets in the way, and always have a way to pivot and do something else. But I think the big takeaway is, again, it's not your plan. It's the lodge's plan. So if you want it to be successful, you've got to get buy-in from all the brethren around you. So if you do that, you will be a successful and happy and peaceful worshipful master.
I love it. I love it. So if you all are listening out there, heed the advice. I want to thank Joe for coming on the show. You can catch Joe every Thursday night on the Masonic Roundtable. He is a co-host there. And we have a good time. Also, you can catch the majority of our gents on the Masonic Roundtable. We are going to be hanging out in New Hampshire August 25th, 26th, 27th for an event that's happening. We're going to be doing some aspects of Masonic education. We'll have a panel discussion at the end. Brother Ryan Flynn will be there as well. It's going to be a great Chris Busby will be there. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a good event, and that's happening, again, I think the 26th of August is the actual day.
Masonic Evening of Light.
The Masonic Evening of Light. Anything else you'd like to plug? Events happening? I know we've got, you've got an event happening, your stadium meeting July 7th at Manassa. Who do you got? You got
July,
special?
July 8th. July 8th. Saturday, yeah. Worshipful Brother Matt Parker.
Excellent.
Yeah, he's going to be there. He's definitely a lodge favorite.
From
yeah.
North Carolina. We got a couple of Matt Parkers who are famous now.
North Kakalaka. Yeah. yeah, he's going to be there. Yeah, we'll be busy. I'll be traveling quite a bit. Finally get to go to Crown Martyrs Lodge.
Oh, in
July.
Indiana.
Yes. Going to go see Mr. Bridegroom and his homies. Yes, so I'm super excited about that. And I'm out on the social medias, so super big fan. What show number is this going to be?
This will be episode number 569. Nice.
Oh, okay. Exciting.
Well, we'll talk. No, I'm just kidding. 599.
Oh, my goodness.
599.
Well, I'm super honored to be here. That's amazing. Yes, that is definitely a milestone. And, yeah, man, you're definitely one of the reasons why I started to give a crap about Freemasonry again. So,
thanks.
Keep up the good work, man.
Will do. Everybody out there, if, again, you want to hear more, TMR, we'll have links in the show notes. This has been the Winskimi Podcast, and we're just going to release this one raw, no editing. So, enjoy it. Let's see what else we got. I guess that's it. So if you're interested in assisting out the WCY podcast, head on over to the website, wcypodcast.com, click on support the show, and check out the various options. It's thanks to you all that the show gets made. Big props to all of our supporters, contributors, fellows, producers, legacy partners. That's it. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson with Joe Martinez.